In the words of David Bowie, cha-cha changes. There's lots of new rules in the 2025 season. We're going to discuss those and also discuss what we change.
Hello and welcome to the British Touring Car Podcast. We are back once again and we are building up to the 2025 season. We're going to have a quick look at the rule changes that have been coming in for this season, but also we've had some requests from our listeners to see what we would change for this season and going forward. So we're going to take you through our thoughts as well.
Because like every armchair pundit, we know better than everyone in the FIA, in Toka. No. You need two lads on
Alan a podcast. Alan Gow's got nothing on us.
Two lads on a podcast. That's what you want. So yeah, we've covered these changes in other pods, but we're getting close to the season. So it made sense just to quickly go over them again. So 100% sustainable fuel has been bought in. That we saw Daryl De Lyon running this towards the end of last season. That's coming in across all the teams for this year. If it's got to go green, we don't want the sport to go electric. Well, I don't want the sport to go electric. So if we can find a way of becoming more sustainable.
And Gow doesn't want it to go hybrid, apparently.
No, because obviously hybrid has also gone for the 2025 season. In terms of engine spec, the two-year engine freeze has come into effect from the 1st of April 2025, which means that teams cannot change their engines for 2 years. It also, in effect, prevents development on those engines 2 years. They are stuck with whatever they bring to the grid on the 1st of April 2025. This is for competitiveness and to save costs. I don't agree with the competitiveness because if you can't develop and you've got a dead engine, but anyway.
Especially as someone like Hyundai, who we know have got a really strong engine, they're going to be at a slight benefit, whereas they can continue with that going forward. And I think there is a slight caveat in there that the Toka supplied engine will still be able to have little bits tweaked to it.
In terms of tyres, it'll be mandatory for the three overall podium finish in race one to run the hardest tyre available in race two. This was a change from the top 10 last year. I think that's terrible, but we'll come on to that in a minute because unsurprisingly, for someone that talks a lot about tyres, that will be one of my changes. And also, Thruxton will be the usual exemption from this rule because we can only run hard tyres unless we want to have cars have blowouts all over the place. In terms of safety car, we're going to go to a more NASCAR-style safety car restart. When the lights are off, it will accelerate away. All the cars must cease weaving, braking and or accelerating, and they must stay no more than two car lengths from the car ahead of them. I can't wait for that to be enforced. That's going to be spectacular.
I can't wait to sort of like hear after the race going how many people were on the radio going, he's done this, he's done that, he's done that.
Yep. And then basically the lead car becomes the safety car, takes the speed the safety car was doing. So I can't wait for that. Drivers after going the safety car was too slow or too fast, whatever. Can't wait for that argument. And then once they reach the restart point, they can all race back normally. Again, I don't, This strikes me as if it's not broke, don't fix it. But there we go.
It could cause chaos, couldn't it? I think in the first couple of instances of where we're going to see a safety car this season, which we can almost guarantee now we won't, that I think it is going to take some getting used to, especially for the drivers and even more so for the drivers that haven't been on the grid before. But going forward, we'll see how it develops, really.
Particularly when it's wet and visibility is a problem, because that seems to be one of the most obvious times to use a safety car. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. Jack says the eligibility criteria has been slightly tweaked. So if you've anyone can compete in this who hasn't won the Jack Sears before and hasn't got more than one outright podium. So that suggests that if you've won a race but not finished the podium since, you will be able to compete. We'll wait to see how that one comes as the season gets closer. And finally, qualifying format. We did raise this last year a couple of times that if you got a change in conditions between the first two qualifying sessions, you were at a real disadvantage for race day. This now means that grid positions for cars that do not progress from both groups in the first part of qualifying will be changed. Those from group one who don't progress into part two will be on the even number, and those from group two on part one will be on the opposite side of the grid, so they'll be odds, which basically just to say means that if you have
start alongside each other rather than behind whichever the slower group was.
Yeah, basically. Otherwise, if you had a wet session and the pit guys are ready to dry, you're guaranteed to be the bottom six, which is a little bit unfair given that you can't control the weather. Cool. So they are, that's a quick whistle stop tour of the changes. I think we have discussed our views on them in the past. We won't do that now. What we will do is say how we would make the sport better, because we have, of course, got ideas. I'm sure as many of you at home do as well, because it is a fan sport and we've all got good ideas. Mm-hmm. You've actually got one more idea than me, so you can kick us off and I'll then tell you why it's rubbish.
One thing I will say is do let us know your thoughts and feelings on the proposed rule changes for the 2025 season. And before we get into ours, let us know your thoughts on what you would change going forward. We always like to hear different people's views, different people's opinions, because everyone has a slightly different thought about how we should make racing better, basically. So my first one going forward is a change to the point system.
Okay.
Which, yes, I think points should be given for all drivers that finish a race slash are classified in a race.
I'll reserve judgment until you've given your full explanation.
So, for example, if we were to have all 24, we're hoping, cars be on the grid and finish a race this season, then the person who finished 24th would still get points. I've come up with my own little system of how we could score this.
I said I was going to wait, but I'm going to have to inject here now. Sam has a child, ladies and gentlemen, so this is very much sports day. Everybody gets a prize for turning up, basically.
I just think it gives everyone across the whole grid more to play for throughout the season. Yes, there are going to be drivers that are going for just the Jacksears or just the Independents, but giving points throughout the whole championship process still means that you're going to have people fighting, even if they have a drive-through penalty, if they have to go into the pits for something. If they're still classified, they're still scoring points. I think it stops those drivers who have been having a bad race go, right, pull the car in, we'll get it ready for the next one.
Okay, would you like to read, or do you want to give your points tallies
so
first? And I'll then, yes.
My points tallies go all the way from 100 for a win down to 1 point for 24th. Depending how many drivers we have in the championship.
Would you be keeping fastest lap point, leading a race point, qualifying point?
Yes, but those would probably still be adjusted. So maybe we see 5 points for them or 3 points for them. So we'll see a whole lot more points being scored. Oh,
the people that go after the graphics, I feel sorry for, because we're going to have 150,000 points scored from some of these drivers. Okay.
So yeah, my proposal is 100 points for a win, 85 for second, 75 for third, and then going down in slightly smaller increments. So it's a bit different.
It's something different
to get used to. But okay. We do see sports like IndyCar where you have massive amounts of points given throughout the whole series. And I just think touring cars could do with a little bit of a shake-up.
Okay. I'll be honest, I hate this idea. But this is why this podcast is good, because we are going to disagree on bits and pieces, and no doubt people will have their own opinion as well.
That you probably want to go the opposite.
No. I think there should be more points on the table, potentially. But I think it always depends on the grid. I think there should be a percentage of places that don't get points.
Okay.
And that depends on the size of the grid. So if the grid's small, you reduce the number of points. If the grid's large, you widen the number of points.
Okay.
I'd be happy with that. And I think, particularly in F1, the fact that only half the grid scores points is silly. That should be extended me to be a big, maybe 12, maybe 14 cars score points. I don't like the child sports day. Everybody gets a sticker for turning up.
I know a couple of the times last season we mentioned that we thought having points all the way down to 15th.
Yeah, I thought
with that, only 20, 22 cars on the grid.
I'd have shortened it to 12 last year, personally. I think that you take away with that, A, the jeopardy of motorsport, and B, fighting for... Why would you fight for a position when you know you're going to get a point anyway?
Because it would still give you more points towards the end of the championship and where you're going to finish overall. I think with that, there would be more of an incentive if there was this set amount of prize money for each team where they finish in a championship, where a driver finishes in the championship each year. I think there needs to be more money coming into the
sport. Yes, I'd agree with you on that.
To complement that. But I don't see... I'd like to see more people fighting throughout the whole grid rather than just having those stragglers at the back that we sometimes have, say, if you've had a bad race, and they've got nothing still to play for.
Although those stragglers often do have the Jacksears still to play for.
Yes.
Or potentially Independents as well. I suppose if you're somebody who's investing in the sport, having a driver that finishes on 2 points in the season looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
If they finish on 400 points, even though they've still been gotten a similar way, it looks better. I'm hoping your other two ideas would be better personally. I'm not a fan of this one, but look, that's not to say you're wrong. That's not to say it's not a good idea. I'm not on board with this one. If I was a dragon, I'd be out.
Investing.
No. But look, there's probably some people at home who do agree with you that is a good thing. Let us know.
Yeah, this podcast is going to be hopefully divisive. Provide a lot of debate as well afterwards.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm just... to me, you're then devaluing the sport that you can finish last, be lapped three times.
I mean, it could
trundling around offering nothing and still getting points.
It could be the case that a championship driver has a really poor weekend, still manages to pick up a couple of odds and sods points that could actually win them a championship.
But is that how they should win a championship?
It means that you're always racing for something all the time, in my mind.
Yeah, but should motorsport, the pinnacle of motorsport, be child sports day? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Next, you'll be saying in Premier League football, 5 points for a win, 3 points for a draw, 1 point for a loss, because at least you turned up and gave it a go. I quite like the idea of, if we're going to, just quickly on points, I quite like the idea of introducing more bonus points. If you win a certain amount of races in the season, you get an extra 10 points or so. I quite like the idea of that sort of thing. Like in rugby, if you score so many tries, you get the bonus point, etc. That.
Or if you score so many points over a weekend, you get a little boost as well.
I quite like that as an idea. Or if you're in the top six in qualifying so often, then you get extra points. I don't mind bringing in...
have something for that. It's the Wingfoot Award. Well,
yeah, but I don't, again, but I don't mind necessarily bringing in extra points other than just leading their lap, fastest lap and qualifying. I quite like the idea of maybe bringing bonus points, but I can't.
About points for overtaking.
See, they used to do the Forever Forward Award. It was way better than the...
But what if you could have someone that's had a really poor race one, they're starting from the back of the grid in race two, and they get points for each overtake that they then make?
I think the only problem with that is that reward drivers at the back of the grid and then might end up in a championship battle. Is that a good thing? I don't know.
Point per place? Could be something to think about. See, I've got your mind turning now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not convinced on this one. Mine is slightly less bonkers for my first suggestion. And
The first one, anyway,
yeah. It's tyres. Look, I hate the rules around tyres. I don't like in sport where cars that have done well in any shape or form, they're in the rules, by the way, get penalised for doing well. And the current tyre rule means if you finish in the top 10, you have to, well, last year's was, if you finish top 10, you have to run the worst tyres possible for the next race, which, particularly at Croft, which I was at, just created this complete two-class race where it was stupid.
Yeah, we've seen it a couple of times where that's happened.
And I think it's even more stupid that they're doing it to the top three. Because they're just going to tumble down the order like a star. What is the incentive to win a race, race one? What's the incentive? You might as well finish fourth now.
Finish fourth, yeah. And then you can't.
Then
your car doesn't even get checked anyway.
Then win race two on your soft tyres, and then take the gamble for race three on where you might be on the
plate. Reverse grid,
take the hard. Everyone around you've been hards anyway, because generally they get saved for the last race of the day. And I just don't see the logic of this. Why would bother winning if you're going to get? And look, the ballast I liked because I get. You penalise them to a degree because it keeps things interesting, fine.
It's linear.
But the balance is because you could also find ways to engineer around that. You
can engineer around it. It's linear as well, where you can have that different weight spread across a certain amount of drivers.
And the hybrid worked in the same sense of you gave so much to the cars.
Last year.
But that worked, and I quite liked that. You had to be more tactical about when you used it, and that all made a lot of sense, and that was fine. This seems absolutely balmy. So I'm not against having different tyre compounds at a weekend. That's fine. I'm against having three. That's absolutely ridiculous.
See, I think three would work quite well, and you have to run each tyre in a different race.
Yeah.
Leaving it open to the teams and the drivers as to where they want to run them across the weekend, because you could be really unlucky and you could run your soft tyre in race one and get crashed into, get a failure or something, and then you really got on the back foot.
Unless you've got your point system, and then they still get 50 points for...
I understand that, but there has to be that risk and reward
within
the race.
That's why I think have two, and at least you've got a second chance if it goes wrong. I'm happy to have two, but I think it should be completely up to the teams when they run them. And I also think the team should be forced to run the hard compound in one of the qualifyings throughout the year, so they have to elect one weekend where every driver has to run the harder compound in qualifying.
Okay,
just to make that a bit more interesting.
Okay.
I don't want to do it so you have Q3's one, Q2's one, and Q1's another tyre, because not everyone's going to get through to those.
And it
makes no difference if you're all in Q1 and you're all running hard, it makes no difference. But I like the idea that every weekend, or throughout the season, every driver has to elect one weekend where they'll run the hard tyre in qualifying. Quite like that, as it just adds a little extra dynamic to qualifying, particularly now I've lost the hybrid as well to make that difference in qualifying. But yeah, I think keep the tyre compounds. That's fine. Just, I don't, why tell teams when they've got to do them? The simple rules are you've got soft, you've got not soft, you've got, unless it's Thruxton, yeah. you've got to run them both over the weekend. Up to you how you do it. Crack on. And I also think that if, given where we are in Britain and it's very wet most of the time and we often get greasy tracks, I'm all for bringing back the days where you could have wets on the front, slicks on the rear, or vice versa, depending on what you want to do, and actually have different tyres on the car.
That one I definitely agree yeah. with. There are so many times, and we've seen even over the last couple of seasons, where you've had that greasy yep. track. Yes, okay, you get the excitement of do you go full slicks or full wets at the start, and yeah. you still have that big split in the field of where they go between.
And you're constantly waiting for it to change. You're sitting there going, is it going to be this lap? Is it going to be this lap? And the laps tick away, and actually it becomes anticlimactic because the crossover very rarely comes. It very rarely comes.
Yeah.
Silverstone, where Goff won, is about the only time I could think of in recent time where you really got the tyre crossover window. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah. you can still get that choice wrong as well, even course, if you yeah. do go for that mixed yeah. tyre strategy.
But we don't have intermediate tyres.
And it would also shorten the pit stops if you did need to make yeah. that change, because yeah. you could just change an axle set of tyres.
Yeah. So I think that, personally, bring back to be able to mix and match tyres. People like Tom Chilton used to always have a bit of fun yeah, with that sort of thing. And I think it made the racing interesting, because, as I say, at the minute, I think to Snetterton last year, which could and perhaps should have been a really exciting race.
It'll also
just
make,
didn't make it, just didn't come.
It'll also make a difference between front wheel drive and yep. rear wheel drive as to how you want that car set up, whether you're on it a little bit twitchy at the rear or whether you want that traction out of a corner yep. with the rear wheel drive car.
So you half agree with my tyres?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought that wet slick combination should it's be fun. A part. It is.
It's it fun, is. Isn't it? Yeah.
But yeah, I also think it can possibly be a little bit safer rather than having someone on a full slick tyre going yeah. careering off.
Well, and also I think also safer than being on a full wet tyre, because if it's too dry, they can't get the heat and they're going to careering yeah. off in a different way. So
yeah.
yeah, absolutely. And I don't want an intermediate tyre. It's too expensive. It's not. There's no point of an intermediate tyre no. in any motorsport. It doesn't get used in F1 because it's either wet or it's slick, so we don't race at all. and same in this sport. So don't bother with that. It's too costly. Mix and match. Bit of fun.
Okay, so my second rule change that I would go for is all manufacturer teams will have to run a young driver or a rookie.
Okay.
My thought behind this is you get that development throughout a series. And if you've got a manufacturer backing,
yep.
you've normally got a decent amount of money behind the team in the first place, so they can kind of afford to run that less experienced driver that might struggle a little bit more with sponsorship, but you could see a talent coming into the series like we've had across the last 10-15 years, seeing Hill come in, Ingram come in.
Well, even going further back, Huff, who run the Cooper Cup.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are so many drivers out there that don't get that opportunity yes. to run because they just don't have the money behind them.
That I agree with. What I would...
Okay. Especially as most manufacturer teams are now four cars. I don't think it has that bigger impact.
Should Toka part fund that, do you think? Because all I'm thinking is, what is the incentive for a manufacturer to come in if they're going to have to, I'm putting it a bit harshly here, but hamstring themselves by not having
stick
the strongest...
Stick up a load of money.
And not have the strongest... Yeah. And potentially risk that rookie binning it, because rookies bin cars.
Yeah.
That happens. Mazepin, Schumacher, we're looking in particular, and going back to F1 as an analogy. So should Toka part fund that maybe to otherwise I say, it's hard enough getting manufacturers into the sport as it is. If yeah. you then say, right, you're putting the money in, it's your repair bill. Oh, by the way, you've got to run this 16-year-old who's, you know, a bit wet behind the ears and might go stick it in the barrier.
I don't think it would be fully necessary. It may help to give that incentive to manufacturers, especially if you're wanting new manufacturers to come into the sport. Mm-hmm. But we're already kind of seeing it at the moment, especially this year going forward, where we've got De Leon being in the BMW. Obviously, you'd probably look at Sam Osborne, although he's done plenty of races, as being that rookie driver or that young driver in that team. You've got Dan Zelos last season in, and Pearson in at Accelerated. Already do this somewhat anyway. And then Toyota, I think, have got enough manufacturer backing that they could stick a young driver in there for development, for experience. Okay, they might not stay with that team forever, but it gives them that experience of being in the sport.
Would you make it also that there has to be a minimum of 2 years? Because I think the problem is that It takes a year.
Difficult.
It's difficult, but what you don't want is them to go just do it so it's arbitrary. So, okay, this year it's, this guy, he's not done that well. I'll just chuck this guy in. No, he's not done that well. Just chuck this guy in. Because ultimately then, all these rookies are remembered are is for quote, failing at their chance. So I think that there should be, they have to be on the, or if they're not going to run over them, they have to make sure they've got a seat on the grid.
Yeah.
So they have, I think, for example, Sam Smelt in the Toyota had one season. Yep. He was the Toyota development job or part of their scheme. Didn't do very well, for being honest. Not seen or heard from him since. I've not searched him out, to be fair, but he's not linked to a return either.
I wonder whether there would have to be almost like performance goals to hit to carry on into that second season. Because you don't want them aimlessly going down a two-year route of a driver that they don't think is eventually going to make it anyway.
No, but then you don't want to just have a revolving door of, you've not done that well. Well, no, I've never raced the touring cars before and I'm a young rookie driver. What are you expecting? Are you? Well, you didn't do that well, dumping you, bringing the next one in.
Yeah.
Halfway through the season, oh no, we'll dump you, we'll bring another one in.
Yeah.
What you don't want is the Red Bull door, is it?
No, I know. I get that. And
or the Alpine alleged 6-race contract. I mean, what chance are you giving rookies in that scenario? I like your idea of bringing rookies through. I love it because I've been doing a lot of research for a 2000s retrospect that we're going to be bringing out in the coming months because it's taking a lot of work. But yeah, back then you saw, this driver came through because he won the Clio Cup. This driver got his seat having won the Sayat Cup or impressed. And that doesn't happen anymore in the same way.
The other thing that we could look to incorporate with that is using that Toka Junior role. When it exists, hopefully. And bring in a driver through from that into that young driver program and system.
I don't. I love the idea. I think practically it'd be very difficult to make work, but I like the idea. I do like that way more than the points. And of course, if they were bought in and had your points system, they'd still finish the season with 4,010 points, which is great for their morale. So, and be able to have a go at tyres as well, which is good. No, I like the idea of that. I just, making it work would be difficult, but that's not a reason not to do it. So.
What about your second one?
My second one is grid makeup in terms of how the grid is decided. I think more wings on the front. I think that it's time to have a look at how the grid makeup for the three races is achieved. So
something we've been talking about for a couple of years now, and it almost needs another shake up.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I think the new qualifying format is brilliant.
Yes.
That works really well. Happy of that. That sets the grid for race one. Not fiddling with that whatsoever. I would then be reversing race two.
Okay.
Still in a random format, whether you bring
certain amount of cars or depending on size of the grid.
Yeah, still a random ball. I potentially would maybe put it out to the point scoring places can be reversed. So 15 to 1, maybe.
And that a fan picks it, not a driver or a team member.
what I think it should be is consistent. So I don't see why Steve Ryder can't do it. He's there every weekend. Yeah. He's an integral person. Everyone respects him, as far as I'm concerned. I've never heard anybody say anything against him. Why? It makes no sense in my mind that you give anyone who's got, stands to benefit from the draw the chance to make the draw. You don't have in the FA Cup draw the captain of the team. They go, oh look, we've gone and got the League Two team at home. That's helpful, is it? So no, it needs to be the same person every week. But that's fine. Well, if you make it to 15 to 1, I'm not really bothered on numbers. But you reverse race two. The reason for that is that race three is then the fastest lap from race two.
Okay.
So, and this is why I've come up with this scheme. At the minute, if you get punted off by an idiot in race one.
Or unfortunate circumstance.
Yep. Or an idiot.
Another name for them.
Yep. If an unforeseen something happens, which you have no control over.
Failure.
Which you have no control over.
Yes.
And you get punted off in race one, that can realistically be your weekend done. Mm-hmm. Because at the minute, you've then got to start at the back of the grid.
Yep.
Which you still would have to in this, to be fair. But if you then get yourself into the points, as it stands at the minute, even if you get yourself to 10th, which would be a good recovery drive. We'd say that's a good recovery drive. 24th to 10th, good recovery drive, yeah?
The only thing I would say is if you are obviously going off that fastest lap for race two, tending to be a driver that's got clear air is normally the driver that is able to get the fastest lap. Obviously, on certain circuits, it doesn't always work that way. But are you still going to have the person who possibly goes on to win race two then start again at the front for race three?
But that happens now anyway, with race one and two being the same. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. With race, say, if you got to race two under the current format and you started 24th and got to 10th, we'd say that's a good recovery drive.
Yep.
you're still not guaranteed the reverse grid draw. It could be a six, and you're still struggling to get points. And that could be your whole weekend wiped off.
Yeah.
Under this system, you still would have to fight back in race two, but you'd have that added bonus that you could be setting the fastest lap time to give yourself a chance of getting back in at race three and being able to run in the higher end of the points. I understand what you're saying.
I think it needs some finessing. I certainly think it's something that needs looking at going forward. And
In my mind, I don't understand why race one sets the grid for race two. Mm. I don't see that, because all you're doing is reward. Okay, yeah, you're rewarding the drivers did well in race one, but then you're completely discounting most of the grid. I think that if you want closer racing, rather than messing about with tyres and having different, let's actually shake up how you make up the grid. And interestingly, when the reverse grid was brought in, it was originally used in race two, not three.
Can I put something a little bit controversial out there?
You hate the reverse grid.
What if, for race one, we take a reverse championship order?
Well, what's the point in qualifying then?
Wait.
Okay.
And then qualifying sets it for race two.
Okay.
And then you have another format for race three.
Yeah. I don't hate that.
Shakes it up a lot more, I think.
Yeah, I don't dislike that.
Still gives you that format of having qualifying on the Saturday being worth something.
Yep. Yeah, I can understand that. I say at the minute, my biggest problem is at the minute, race two, if you're hit off in race one, race two is a pointless race for you, because unless you can get yourself into the top six where you're guaranteed a decent reverse grid or whatever happens,
Or you change the limitations of where the reverse grid starts.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, possibly that as well. Then.
Do you take it from 12th downwards? And almost do at least half the grid is reversed.
Yeah, as I say, I think in the minute, I'm not too precious about how it's done. I just think in the minute that you get punted off in race one, race two is now, particularly the tyres as well, if you've had used your soft tyres in that race and you've now got to use the, particularly on a free weekend, free tyre weekend, you've now got to use your mediums to try, you're never going to make up the ground. So actually use race two as a chance to give yourself something for race three. And in the minute, unless you can guarantee you get into the top six or seven, which is really difficult because touring cars is difficult to move forward in because there's lots of good drivers.
Yeah.
Race three is also pointless for you. And we've seen the driver that comes to mind has suffered a lot, particularly last year, is Aidan Moffat, who's not qualified well.
No.
Had a problem in race one, can't get through the grid, whatever. And then actually his whole weekend becomes about 12s, 13s. And actually,
With my point system, he would still get plenty of points for them.
He would, yeah. I mean, I really do think that the format of the grids needs looking at. I'm open to ideas.
Yep.
I'm not saying my way is the best idea, but I do like the idea of having a fastest lap or some grid being set up by fast laps within a race. It's very easy to put fast laps together, and he says very easy. It's different putting fastest laps in qualifying than it is in a race format, and I quite like the idea of... But then it also gives somebody an incentive in race two if they can punt it off as well in race two.
Or something like that.
Yeah, they come back out and try and... Because that's the other thing. If you go off in race two, your weekend's over because you're not going to get the reverse grid either. So at the minute, you have a problem in race one and or two, your weekend's pretty much done.
Okay.
Which isn't good for sponsors, unless you've got 50,000 points coming your way. So
my final rule change, or proposed rule change, is very much an overview of the sport and how high costs are at the moment. I think it is getting towards a desperate situation to where we need to bring costs down again. And this isn't my rule, but do we need to look like a firm cost cap for each car for each season? But my general rule is having more parts aligned throughout the whole grid.
Oh, good. You want TCR.
More parts aligned throughout the whole grid. So fairly standardised, like suspension setup. I know, obviously, brakes at the moment are fairly standardised as well. Possibly having more...
homologation.
Yeah, but also more like active aero, more where you can change where your downforce is and stuff like that. Mainly.
Okay, I'll wait till you finish. You start, so you'll finish.
Mainly because I think it then puts it more down to driver ability. Now, at the moment, we do see the majority of driver ability rise to the top. And we do see arguably the best drivers on the grid still winning the championship at the end of the season.
But, I'm just biting my tongue.
But are we seeing drivers struggle, almost like we did last year with Pearson struggling for funding midway through a season because he'd had failures on the car, he'd had incidents along the way, and he was struggling for budget and therefore couldn't complete the season. I want to see every driver that starts a season finish a season, and I want to see it accessible to more drivers as a whole by bringing costs down, because we know that there is a huge disparity between certainly last year, say, driving for BMW and driving for Unlimited.
Okay, I agree with bringing costs down,
yep.
But I don't agree with a cost cap, because there's 115 odd ways of breaching a cost cap. So the thing is,
a Liverpool fan.
There will always be a way of breaching the cost cap, whether that's spending money on catering, whether that's, you know, there's always a way around it. And also, the bigger the team, the more they can afford the clever legal brains to find the rule around it. So I don't like cost caps, because I just think they're there to be broken.
Yep.
I don't actually disagree with more homologation. My only worry is that a homologated series is TCR. That is a homologated series.
Yes.
And you look at the field spread that develops during a race.
Yes.
And it is huge at times. But I would worry that we'd have that in touring cars.
I would also argue that the calibre of drivers in the touring cars is far closer than we see in TCR, certainly at the moment.
I would agree, but I just... Yeah, it's really difficult, because on the one hand, you want to see... At the pinnacle of motorsport, you want to see every aspect. You want to see it being driver ability, setup ability. I don't know if it's a Formula One podcast, but one of the interesting things about Formula One is how different aero packages on the car, how they get the different, and that, what difference that makes.
Yeah.
And if you were to say, for example, F2, which is more homologated than Formula One, I think the racing's poorer. And that's also because the drivers aren't as good. I accept that as well. But also, you look at the support series, the minis are homologated. I don't think that is as good as the touring car racing, because again, you get a feel. But I don't think it is as good as touring car racing. Dan Seals has won it 19 times in a row by your point system, but look at it at times, you know, it's...
When you've got a driver that is a class of a more homologated field, then you are going to have probably a runaway winner.
Yeah, and we see that.
When you get into the Premier Series in the UK, being touring cars, you're going to get very good drivers up at that level. And we know very few drivers make it from minis to touring cars, make it from Ginettas to touring cars.
But are you just going to see what you see now, which is Sutton, Hill and Ingram win most of the races, if not all of them? And is it actually going to change anything in terms of... I'm not sure. The headline of getting costs...
It stops teams just chucking money at a car.
Yeah.
I don't think we would have seen the domination that we had from Napa a couple of years ago.
Had Napa not come in and...
funded it.
Yeah. It's really difficult, because I agree that costs are getting out of control, and I agree it's putting a lot of people off the grid, and I agree that a lot of sponsors and cars are looking at other motorsport away from touring cars, and it blows my mind that it's potentially cheaper to run a Ferrari in GT than it is to run an Audi in touring cars. So that blows my mind. I accept that.
We see far too many drivers not being able to get on the grid, such as Bobby Thompson.
Yeah.
We know how good a driver he is. We know he can take race wins. And I think if he was given the machinery underneath him and cost wasn't an issue to him...
Well, not as much of an issue.
Then I think he would be a driver that finishes in the top eight consistently every single year.
It's difficult. It is really difficult, because
and unfortunately everything always boils down to money.
Yeah, and you'll get some people go, with a homologated series, you see the talent, and you're right, you do, but what you also tend to see is domination by one or two drivers, and the rest of the thing becomes quite boring. Didn't Dan Kamish win every single race in F4 when he entered it?
Formula Ford. We know how good a driver he is.
Yeah, but is that good for a chat? And I know you say touring cars has got higher caliber of drivers, and I agree with that, but there's also, in my opinion, there's three elite drivers and about four or five top drivers, and after that the rest wouldn't get a look in. They just wouldn't get a look in. And then what's the point in their racing apart from for 95 points for fourth?
But you're still going to have a difference in setup. You're still going to have a slight difference in cars, different engines and stuff like that. But when you have, you can change the setup on the suspension to a certain limitation, but everyone has the same suspension setup, everyone has the same brakes. Changes in the aero can make a big difference.
The problem is, the more you homologate, so the more you put off diversity of car brand on the grid. You look at TCR, it's Cupras, it's Cupras, and it's Hondas, and it's the occasional, I think there's a Lynx.
Volkswagen
Lynx did it. I think the more you homologate a series, particularly in the touring cars, where part of its attraction is that it's, maybe not so much these days, but it's a diverse range of cars. It's Fords, it's Audis, it's Mercedes, it's Alfa Romeos.
If you had manufacturers coming in just going, build me an engine, we might see more of them about. But yeah, it's
a tricky one, that one.
It's going to be a difference of opinion, and everyone has that idealistic way of how to run the touring cars. We've given you a few of our ideas going forward. We'd love to hear yours. Comment down below, go onto our social media posts, comment on there as well. We'd love to have a good discussion between all of you that follow us. And we're quite happy to chip in as well.
Yeah, that's it. The best place to probably do this would be on Facebook, because that's where we get a lot of the chat going. So make sure you are following the British Touring Car Podcast on our Facebook page. When this video is out, there'll be a link to it on our Facebook page, and you'll be able to tell us which one of us is the most wrong or which one of us is the most pioneering. And also, as Sam says, your ideas are really cool as well. Because look, it's a sport we all love, and it's a sport we all think we can make better. And it's a sport where there's guaranteed the same we would change in any sport we enjoy and watch.
No sport is perfect.
No, you want to hear my views on football and the orange card and the penalty rule that I want to bring in. But that's for another day, maybe another podcast. But yeah, let us know what you think. And I think that pretty much sums this video up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Until the next one, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.
Bye for now.